Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
Well, I was just given a nice compliment that a listener really enjoys my show because I don't have my commercials louder than the show. Apparently, there are some people out there that do not like commercials being so loud. I mean, significantly louder. Now, one of the things I do know about sound is to increase to double the power. If you double the power of your amplification, you gain only 3 decibels. So the question is, are you really doubling the power if you're not touching the volume, but the output is that much louder? Actually, the truth lies in the audio or the recording itself. And so most people don't know how that could even possibly be. Now, there actually are broadcasting methods where they actually do suppress the output of the content and actually increase the output of the commercials. This is a common practice because they know what ends up happening, and they did this research a long time ago, and I'm sorry for sharing this with you, but they've been doing research on effective advertising because getting your attention and having you buy their products is why they spend all the money in doing this in the first place. And so the study was that most people during, most shows, they will get up because this was before the advent of streaming, internet, and everything else. And so in the old TV broadcasting, when you couldn't jump or skip the commercials, well, 9 times out of 10, that's when people got up, took a quick break, went to get something to drink, and so they knew you were off in the kitchen, so they turned the volume up. Well, those of you who didn't go off to the kitchen realize, wow, that thing's blasting kind of loud. And then next thing you know, it gets soft again when the content or the show comes back on. They have been playing and playing and manipulating because it's all about business, right? What do they need to do to get you to pull the trigger on separating you from your money and putting it into their pocket? So they also know about, programming, suggestive advertising, where subliminal suggestions. And they actually did studies on this, and they actually proved this. They did a controlled study with, I think, drive-ins and movie theaters, where they would promote the concessions, and they actually got people to get up and go buy more popcorn from the concession stand. This became illegal practices for movie theaters to do. Now, the reason why this is important, and the reason I'm sharing this, is what makes you think in a world where scruples have gone awry, what makes you think that the content that you receive doesn't have subliminal suggestions? Now, anybody that picks up a Camel cigarette pack or any, there's all sorts of different advertising that has all this different subliminal suggestions. And I'm telling you, corporations exploit that. If corporations selling you a product do whatever they can, what makes you think ideological entities such as, Soros and everything he's doing isn't using subliminal suggestions as much as he possibly can, either within movies, within content itself? What makes you think that Amazon and some of these other companies aren't doing that? Makes you think, right? And so the fact is, the more you unplug and the less susceptible you are to their ability to program you, probably the happier you're going to get, and probably the better you'll sleep at night, and the more clarity you'll have in understanding what you need to do and what needs to be done. And so You know, I mean, it would be one thing if you were listening to my show and in the background you'd hear, buy my book, buy my book, buy my book, you know, all the time, then then I'd probably have high book sales. I'm not here to sell my books. I'm not here to sell any content. I'm here to empower and enable, because we need a party in every state to actually put themselves at the top of that mountain, to center themselves on the Constitution. I don't care what party that is. And if the first party in the state of Missouri is the Constitution Party, awesome. You know, I was trying to do this, you know, nationwide and so forth, but I really don't care. I honestly believe that if you're truly, if Missouri, Virginia, Georgia, and South Dakota, and this long list of states, let's say I have 18 states that are on the top of the mountain, they have done everything necessary to be laser focused on the Constitution, that are Constitution Party states. And let's say we have five that are Independent American Party. Let's say 10 and 10, because I don't want to make it seem like I favor one over the other, right? Got to play political correctness whenever you possibly can. So we've got 10 Constitution Party states, and we have 10 Independent American Party states, and now I have 10 Republican states. In other words, let's say Wyoming, Montana, some of these other states where it's only the Republican Party. We were able to take back the Republican Party, make them focus on the Constitution and do what they needed to do, get up on top of that mountain. Now we have 30 states. What makes you think they can't actually form a unified constitutional party? Because at that point in time, you now have a large enough consensus that moves these states, that basically they are working together. I mean, it doesn't matter what the national party is. It matters that at your state, you get one of those parties to get to that top of the mountain. I don't care. I make no money promoting one party over another. I make my reward is preserving for our posterity all of our liberties, all of our privileges and immunities. That is what I'm doing this for. What's in it for me? The doing the right thing. And so I ask that you join me. I ask that you start your endeavor, and if you find that the Republican Party is too hard, then start with the Independent American Party or the Constitution Party or your own. But you can do this. So we're working on that book, by the way, and what we're hoping to do is have that book by the end of the year, I'm hoping, maybe even sooner, maybe in the next couple of weeks, getting it out to editing. What I will do when I think it is rough enough and crude enough for other people, or cleaned up and not so crude, because it'll always be crude for somebody. There's always the pretentious reader out there. Oh, your grammar sucks. You know what? It's not about, I'm not trying to create the Iliad. I am not trying to create a document that gets the acclaim of the intellectuals. I am trying to provide you a text document that gives you the information you need to be successful in restoring your liberties and creating constitutional counties and creating a constitutional state. That's all I care about. So we're going to be giving this book out while it's out for editing and so forth. Now, what I'm really doing, and this book is really more of an article, then what I'm going to do is I'm going to consolidate all of my material from What is the Real Problem and Martial Law of the 21st Century, The Unseen Teeth in the Constitution. All of these are going to actually become a single book. And what I'm hoping to do is have all the, basically you already have these articles for free, but when the inevitable happens and when that time comes where GR, you know, can't suck any more air because my lungs have completely given up, then I now have some work that I'm hoping can be done posthumously, that will be a simple package that will be already prepared so that that money, that this book can be sold so that it will support my wife. And so what we're trying to also do is monetizing the radio show, but the majority of all those profits are going to go out to you. So I'm, you know, there are these people out there that are creating organizations so that they can put the roof over their head and so that they can do things that, you know, make them money. Those are what we call PAYtriots, patriots, that are in it for the pay, not for the Constitution. In other words, they're not really supporting the Constitution. They're supporting their own needs and desires. What we need is less paid PAYtriots and more constitutional patriots. So anyway, let me just kind of jump into the old, what we call the obligatories. As you know, the show is also sponsored by republicreview.org, and this is the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions necessary in getting the governments, all of our governments, back into and complying with the U.S. Constitution as well as the state constitutions. Now, when we come back, because we're going into break, we're going to actually cover the ominous 25th Amendment, because I was going to cover it and I go, wow, there's just no way I can even get through this. So we'll be back on track with that when we come back. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADD-LOCAL or visit them on the web at www.addlocal.com.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so the 25th Amendment. And just to be clear, what we're trying to do is, again, we're trying to help you understand the divine hand and his DNA in this. So when we start looking at some of these things, you know, it's almost like some of these amendments, like the FDR, the anti-FDR amendments, you could tell those weren't necessarily divine. They weren't that clear as to why they were needed. But this one right here, I do believe, is one of those that, because when Satan starts to influence and actually starts doing nefarious things, nine times out of ten, what ends up happening is the Lord kind of intervenes to make sure that there's something there. And I'll give you a case in point, because we were just talking about slavery. And we were talking in our last episode, I was mentioning how slavery became this huge mistake in the compromise. And so as they started putting the compromises into the Constitution, they did so that would actually make it to, that would allow slavery to linger, but place enough pressures within the Republic that would actually get rid of slavery. And this is proven because they ended up having to institute the Missouri Compromise to propel slavery further down the road. Because as they were coming up to the Missouri entering into the Constitution as a free state, because they knew that the people of Missouri, not the influencers, not those people who had money, but the people of Missouri were going to actually create a free state. So they had to step in and say, no, Missouri, you actually have to be a slave state. Oh, well, you took away our, you know, the influencers are out there saying, oh, well, that's okay, but it's too bad you took away our ability to do that. Bottom line, folks, when that stuff started happening, then obviously the outcome was being forced further down the road that required, because I honestly believe that had we gone down this road of allowing slavery to die within this first 30 years or so, because that's probably 50 years at least, because 2025 or 1825 would have been that point in time, right? That's about 50 years past the Declaration of Independence. But my point is that when we look at what was happening and what was going to happen when they started intervening, I believe that is what propelled us down this road that required the spilling of blood and the sanctifying. I believe we don't need to spill blood or sanctify anything anymore. I believe that we've kind of made all those things right with those four different amendments in ensuring that all people were able to engage in the process and engage in those things that they have a right under a Republican form of government. People, when they look at me and they hear what I have to say regarding, you know, everybody being able to vote in every matter, no, that's a democracy, not a Republican form of government. You have to have stake in the game. I don't want to go back to poll taxes for voting for your own representatives and voting for, you know, those people that are to represent us in the White House, Senate, or Congress, or so forth. And in regards to the Senate, prior to the 17th Amendment, we sought our representation by voting for state legislators, as Madison argued during the ratification debates, that the people still chose who their senators were because they were the ones choosing who their legislators were from the county level and from the people's level. So anyway, so when we look at this coming amendment, I am here to tell you that I believe this amendment was had more to do with nefarious purposes, but I think somehow, some way, that this is going to backfire on them, because this was perfectly in play, as far as I was saying in our last episode, the 25th Amendment was a perfect layout for getting rid of Biden and trying to impose the foreigner, the non-U.S. citizen, Kamala Harris, as president. So anyway, Section 1, so this was proposed in 65 and ratified in 67. Section 1, in case of the removal of the president from office or of his death, excuse me, or resignation, the vice president shall become president. Section 2. Whenever, you know, isn't that like stating the obvious? Isn't that how it's supposed to be anyway? Isn't that in Article 2? Anyways, sometimes they do these things and I go, do they know what they're doing? And nine times out of ten, when you read an amendment that starts repeating stuff, it really begs the question, did they not understand this was already in the Constitution? Section 2. Whenever there is a vacancy in the office of the vice president, the president shall nominate a vice president who shall take office upon confirmation by a majority vote or both houses of Congress. Section 3. Whenever the president transmits to the president pro tempore of the Senate and the Speaker of the House of Representatives his written declaration that he is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office, and until he transmits them a written declaration to the contrary, such powers and duties shall be discharged by the vice president as acting president. So they were setting it up so that they could actually have a takeover, kind of. But Section 2 basically meant, or I should say, Section 3 basically required that the president voluntarily say, I'm not in any good state to be able to do my job. Here's the interesting thing when we get into the next one. Section 4. Whenever the vice president and a majority of either the principal officers of the executive departments or of such body as Congress may by law provide transmit to the president pro tempore of the Senate and the Speaker of the House of Representatives their written declaration that the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office, the vice president shall immediately assume the powers and duties of the office as acting president. Now, see, here's one problem. They never verified the qualifications of the vice president. They need to make sure that the vice president is fully qualified. In other words, Kamala Harris cannot become president because she was not born a citizen. Her parents were under the jurisdiction of foreign nations when she was here. Anyway, thereafter, when the president transmits to the president pro tempore of the Senate and the Speaker of the House of Representatives, his written declaration that no inability exists, he shall resume the powers and duties of his office unless the vice president and a majority of either the principal officers of the executive department or of such other body as Congress may by law provide. So in other words, Congress can create a body that says, we don't like the president. We want you to basically make him so that he can't function because we can get stuff done with the president or with the vice president as president. So transmit within 4 days to the president pro tempore of the Senate and the Speaker of the House their written declaration that the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office. Thereupon, Congress shall decide the issue, assembling within 48 hours, within 2 days, for that purpose, if not in session. In other words, if they're on break and they don't happen, you know, like right now when they're out campaigning, they have to get their butts back to D.C. within 2 days and actually, you know, convene this body of the whole to settle this issue. If the Congress within 21 days after receipt of the letter written declaration, or if Congress is not in session within 21 days after Congress is required to assemble, determines by 2/3 vote of the House, of both houses, that the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office, the vice president shall continue to discharge the same as acting president. Otherwise, the president shall resume the powers and duties of his office. So what we have here is the ability for people to play with the president and his ability to function as president. In other words, Congress, clearly, all they need is a nefarious vice president and a nefarious Congress to actually be able to create a body to agree with the removal of the president, and they can actually pull the wool, or I should say, do some shenanigans that, you know, that would not have happened if the president was in office. In other words, if they can't get the president to basically do what they want him to do, you know, like if they got Trump. So here's the thing. Let's just play with, and I'll let you go into break, of thinking, what could have Pence done with the Democratic Congress in 2018? Let's just think about that, and we'll explore that when we come back.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so we already know what happened on January 6th. We already know that Pence, Mike Pence, was in the pockets of the globalists. We know that Mike Pence did his job to make sure that the Constitution wasn't complied with. We already know that Mike Pence is not a person who fulfills his oath of office in supporting the Constitution, that his job is to support the agenda and the party globalist agenda, the globalist party. So when I say the globalist party, that's kind of this broad-brushed, you know, double or the two sides of the party itself in America, the Democrats and the Republicans. And so there's no doubt in my mind that Pence was in the place of being able to actually, you know, come out with this, I will just say, with being an actor in the lie. Now, here's the problem. Trump happened to be, just think, let's go back and look at the alternatives for 2016. If you remember who the different presidential candidates were in 2016. Remember, Cruz was a big one, and some of these other little names. I think Santorum was a player too. I mean, all these different names that were out there. Trump was bigger than life. And so there's no doubt in my mind that Trump, or I should say Pence, would have done his job in undercutting the president. In other words, I could have seen in 2018 with the radical leftists that took over that Pence would have written the note and that Congress could have gone over into session and created an entity to provide a supporting argument for the removal of Trump because he was just crazy, because they were viewing him as incapable, sorry about that, I just had a sneeze, so incapable of executing his duties as president. Okay, so as we look at the way things went down, the only thing that they didn't have was they didn't have enough control in the Senate. There's no doubt in my mind the 25th Amendment was already on their lips of being able to seek full control, the globalist control. Because you got to realize that the person that gets elected as president, even though they may be doing the bidding of the globalists, they have this personal, I'll just say, relationship, this intimacy with the voters of getting out there and promising very specific things. And so it's hard to be able to actually, I mean, look at Biden. Biden is a perfect example of somebody that may have promised, you know, certain things and then delivered those and even worse. I mean, Biden is doing things that is pissing off Democrats left and right. Why is that? Because he's turned too far to the left, more so than what the left, or I should say the majority of the Democrats, wanted, which means that he's bought into the real radical side. Well, so this goes back to that metaphor or that image of the Constitution being on top of a mountain. That when you look at these players, all of these players are trying to pull the Constitution down. And they're all, you know, if you look from the very, from a top, from a bird's eye view, and you see this mountain like a, you know, the peak of the mountain is a point where the Constitution is. And you see, you know, 360 degrees around, all of these different people are trying to pull on the Constitution in different ways. And they're all trying to do damage to the Constitution because nobody is taking a stand on the Constitution. Nobody. There's not a party out there yet that has formally built their platform on the Constitution. No one. There's some close. There's some that are higher up on the mountain, but they're not at the top. They're just not there. And so as I look at the 25th Amendment and as I look at what could have played out had Congress in the 2018 election converted the Senate to be far more leftist, I believe that they would have been able to pull this off because they would have needed two-thirds, 66 votes. And right now, they're pretty close to that, right? But they're not there. And I do believe that they would have got the turncoats, the rhinos, to actually do the job. So it would have been a bipartisan effort. But this amendment, if you look at this amendment has the ability for some really bad things to be able to be done because of a movement and or a radical movement within Congress and the vice president. Now, there's also this concept that, you know, we could invoke the 25th Amendment, but it still requires these players. So I'm having a hard time to seeing any, it doesn't mean that it's not there, but I'm having a hard time seeing any of the divine hand of providence's DNA in this particular amendment. Just due to the fact that it allows very specific players. Now, I would have seen an amendment that as the divine hand of providence that there would be an amendment to the Constitution to allow the states to engage or initiate impeachment instead of the House of Representatives. Because if the House of Representatives are so comfortable swimming in their swamp that the states could say, hey, you need to impeach the president because he's doing crap. He has no authority. His policies are antithetical. He is destroying our economy. He's he's killing us, so forth and so on. I could see that happening, but I can't necessarily see Congress today being willing to provide that type of an amendment. Now, I don't want to call, and I'm not supporting for a constitutional convention, but we really need to start looking at, because the beauty of our constitutional system and the majority of the things you see here, even this right here, plays with checks and balances. Our Constitution is filled with so many different checks and balances that there is the design of our Creator, making sure that it maintains this balance as long as we hold dear that design that was given us. Unfortunately, way back in the early 1800s, the people abandoned that design for things for them. And boys, you know, you see these posts, you see people say, you know, it is just unrighteous for a generation to, you know, give themselves benefits to a point where the taxations fall upon their posterity. Well, that's what was happening in the 1800s, but they just said, oh, it hadn't happened yet, so they continued to do it. Oh, it hadn't happened yet. And then in the early 1900s, it started happening where they said, you know, we need to tax more to do more. And that's when it started. And it was this is the boiling of the frog. We're gradually increasing. Look at how much taxes we pay today, folks. Is your life better off? How many people wouldn't rather be living in a time with limited government? Yes, and we would be far much further down the road with limited government as well. The only reason government, or the only reason, you know, we're in these positions where, you know, government is removing the consequences of sin, bad behavior, and so forth, is because government has deliberately gone down these paths of spending your tax dollars in supporting that type of evil, venereal diseases, sexually transmitted diseases. Let's be honest. It's not something that falls from the sky, right? It is something that happens when two people out of wedlock, or two people that, you know, are out there humping around. And forgive me for saying it so crudely, but come on. Why is it that they spent all of this money and billions of dollars to protect people that were doing things that they shouldn't have been doing in the first place? Come on, folks. We've got to start looking at enlightenment instead of endarkenment. We have to start choosing to change our culture back to discipline instead of debasing. It's literally that easy. You know, if we continue going down this debasement path, then when the great and dreadful day of the Lord comes, we will rule the day. We will all have blood on our hands. But if you start acting and start demanding your life back, start demanding full compliance of the Constitution, I think we can actually shift the outcome when he comes again. So with that, when we come back, because we're almost out of time, when we come back, we're going to do the last few amendments that there are. We got the 26th and the 27th. There's a couple of unratified amendments that were out there as well. And so what we want to do is we kind of wrap all of this up in our next episode. So Thursday, we'll actually be wrapping up the Constitution. And then Friday, we'll be moving forward with the immune system and the two parties that had to collude for tyranny to become successful in America. We will be back. Actually, I thought I was ending the show. I actually have another segment. So we actually may be able to wrap up the Constitution now and then dive into that stuff on Thursday. We'll be right back after this.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Now, you got to realize, and you have to appreciate the fact that I could easily edit these shows to where you would never know I make a mistake. But I had to go into the break laughing because here I actually thought I wasn't paying attention to where I was as far as segments go. I just noticed that I was running out of time, so I figured I would just kind of conclude because it seemed like I had done all of the four segments. Not. So that's a first for me. But anyway, the 26th Amendment, proposed in 1971, ratified in 1971 as well. This is the same year, and this was the same election that Washington State actually voted for legalizing abortion. Now, I was not old enough to vote in that election, but this is interesting. The right of the citizens of the United States who are 18 years of age or older to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of age. And the Congress shall have the power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. Now, that just made voting capable for any, but did you see anybody that says nothing, well, only 18 years of age, residents, people living in the United States, 18 years of age? No. It says right here that the rights of citizens of the United States, you had to be a citizen who were 18 years of age. That's the key. Every amendment that played and changed who could vote in America all required citizenship. And today, we actually ignore that because the Democrats allow, because of Clinton, all of these people were deliberately allowing illegals to be able to vote in America. Are you kidding me? That's not based on the Constitution. And one of the things we have to go out of our way to prove, these are the things that are being violated. So here's an inoperative article. This was proposed in 1972, and it expired in 1982. Section 1. Equality of rights under the law shall not be abridged by the United States by any state on account of sex. Okay, so where in the Constitution? So we already know, because I've already told you that there's nowhere in the Constitution that allows anybody, anyone, regardless of color, you, as long as you're a U.S. citizen, you deserve all rights of the privileges and immunities guaranteed under the Constitution. So this right here was a significant change because it called equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged to the United States or by any state on account of sex. In other words, they were trying to allude to the fact that the federal government needed to actually start creating a class war on gender, that you know, they had this right for this special protection for women. Well, they've been doing this anyway. They've been doing the same kind of class warfare over race. They've been doing class warfare over religion as well. See, this is what happens when you open the door way back when on trying to protect or preserve or institute a specific religion. When you open the door for them to mingle around with religion, then you open the door for them to become despotic towards religions of those who are, you know, the majority in power in government. In other words, this becomes, you know, this comes right back around to haunt you when you tried to do something good that you thought, oh, this would be good for, you know, Christendom. Well, actually, now it's being used against Christendom. The same thing here. Now, this was not passed. See, the thing is, this was not passed, and they're still doing this. The Congress shall have the power to enforce by appropriate legislation the provisions of this article. This amendment shall take effect 2 years after the date of ratification. So in other words, they had to create, they estimated a 2-year reforming and building up of a bureaucracy to enforce this law. Isn't that interesting? Another inoperative article proposed in 1978 expired in 1985. For purpose of representation in Congress, election of the president and vice president, and Article 5 of this Constitution, the district constituting the seat of government of the United States shall be treated as though it were a state. This has not been ratified, and they're already doing this. They're already trying to treat the District of Columbia as if it is a state. The exercise of the rights and powers conferred under this article shall be by the people of the district constituting the seat of government and shall be provided by the Congress. The 23rd article of amendment to the Constitution of the United States is hereby repealed. So in other words, that thing that gave them the ability to choose electors, now they get a representative and two senators if this thing had been ratified. This article shall be inoperative unless it shall have been ratified as an amendment to the Constitution of the legislatures of 3/4 of the several states within 7 years from the date of its submission. So, the good thing is it expired. So there's no way this could be possible. But the fact of the matter is that 23rd Amendment that we talked about, that should be repealed as well. If you live in the District of Columbia, you surrender your ability to being a citizen of the several states. You're no longer part of the union. You're a part of the federal government, which is to serve the union, not to serve itself. And that's exactly what they're trying to do, is create an entity that can become self-serving. So here's the interesting last amendment. This was done by Madison, and again, we covered this with the Bill of Rights. This was the second amendment in the Bill of Rights out of the 12 amendments that were submitted. The last 10 were the ones ratified. The first one is still lingering out there that we need to ratify that. However, that being said, this one was lingering out there, and so this is really sad, because this amendment really didn't do much, and the fact that this amendment got passed was really more of a student with the will to prove his professor wrong. You look up the story behind this, and you'll go, oh my, you know, here's the proof of how one person could actually pass an amendment and create a movement by just going around and talking to state legislators and say, why don't we ratify this? The fact of the matter is the First Amendment of the 12 amendments of the Bill of Rights needs to be ratified just so that we can restore representation to 50,000 instead of 30,000, because currently, folks, a representative in Congress cannot exceed the people it represents, or they represent beyond 30,000 people. In other words, we're not abiding by it, and Congress is bypassing it. That First Amendment would actually get us back into and in a better situation. And it doesn't grow government for the 22nd or the 21st century that we're living in. It actually allows us to actually fulfill this, the technology and the capacity and capabilities that technology gives our government to be actually more centric towards the people and serving the people and truly making these public servants instead of, you know, princes and monarchs and so forth. Here is the amendment. No law varying the compensation for the services of the senators and representatives shall take effect until an election of representatives shall have intervened. In other words, if they're to get a pay raise, they vote for themselves to get a pay raise. They don't collect that pay raise until after the upcoming election. So this is how you get rid of them if you don't think they deserve the money. But the fact is, is this is really just a, you know, I don't even know why Madison even put it in there, other than the fact that at that point in time, everybody looked at government as leeches because, you know, they wanted to make sure that people who served in government weren't making money. They couldn't get rich. They wanted to make sure that they were constrained, that they were actually paupers and poor. And I have a problem with that. I believe if you really want good government to work for you, then you got to take away their desire and their focus on things that are so critical, like putting bread on their table, than, you know, than giving them decent compensation. If we gave decent compensation, then they could focus on doing a good job. I'm okay with actually paying for what it takes, and I'm more okay with taking away the ability of lobbyists and those types of things to operate within our constitutional republic. We need to shut down their ability to start creating war chests that they convert into money for themselves. We need to change the way that they get paid, how they vote on bills. You vote this way, you get money. You vote this way, you get money. Are you kidding me? They're literally there bouncing around the halls getting paid to do crap to destroy America. When we come back in our next episode, we're going to be able to cover what we were talking about on our Friday episode regarding how two parties had to be involved so the tyranny could succeed in America. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADD-LOCAL or visit them on the web at www.addlocal.com for custom pricing.